Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Lion Goodman, back on the line. How you doing, Lion?
I am excellent, Jordan. Thank you for having me back.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure. As always, thank you for doing these programs. We really love these different clearings you're doing. And today's a special one, and it's a special encore presentation. It's a extended dance remix. Because you really live in the world of emotions, don't you, Lion? Like, this is kind of your bag.
Well, emotions are so closely tied to our humanity. You know, if you're not emotional, you're kind of more of a robot.
Right.
So, and our emotions can also drive us. They drive our behavior and they drive our interactions with other people. And so they determine our relationships. So if you don't have your emotions cleaned up, you're going to have a messy life.
And in your world of beliefs, I mean, emotions and beliefs are so, there's such a counterbalance there. There's such a symbiotic relationship, so much energy passing back and forth between those two facets of a personality, right?
Right. It's not well understood, but our beliefs are the filter through which we experience the world. So that when someone does or says something, we perceive it through that filter, and that creates certain emotions. So if someone says something that insults us, or we take it as an insult, that's going to cause us to react to an insult and create the emotion of I've just been insulted. So they're very closely tied, and in fact, beliefs can create emotions directly. In fact, all beliefs have a feeling to them, and you can test that by just feeling what it feels like to hold that particular belief.
And emotions can probably solidify beliefs, right? When you feel that emotion, you go, oh, there it is, that emotion again in that situation, that belief must be true, right?
Yes. In fact, that's how the brain works, is that it's said that neurons that fire together wire together. So the more times you have a particular emotion in a particular situation, the more solid that belief becomes.
Mm-hmm. And just really quick, you mentioned, you know, trying on beliefs, and you do it a lot in these programs when you're closing your eyes and you're saying these phrases to yourself. I really succeed with that process. Do you find that some people have a harder time with it than others? Do you find that it gets easier over time?
It does get easier, because what we're doing is going down into our body and noticing what is the sensation there. And I'm going to be talking a lot about this in the clearing process. But when we can feel our bodies and what is going on in our bodies, that's actually where emotions occur. Mm-hmm. They don't occur in our head. And so we are reacting to our bodies and how our body's feeling. And so by feeling what it feels like, we're telling people, look down below your head, down into your heart, your gut,
right,
and your musculature. And that's where you're going to be experiencing the emotion. It's not in your head. So that's the way that we help people learn where their emotions are and what each belief feels like.
But if someone's struggling with this, the more you do it, the quicker you can drop into that zone of awareness, right? Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely.
So before we begin, I wanted to touch on something with you. You know, it's so important. I've really been trying to distill down what the most important thing in life is. And talking to a lot of different people and just listening to a lot of different theories, you know, hearing things like discipline, that used to be a big one. I thought maybe that's the most important, or drive, but that doesn't necessarily always lead to happiness. Delayed gratification was one that I was kicking around for a really long time. But what I'm the kick I'm on right now is, before any of that stuff, before you can even contemplate any sort of virtue or positive attribute, you have to think that you're worth it. And you have to love yourself on some level. Otherwise, it's just a zero. It's just a non-starter. What do you think of that statement?
I agree that worthiness is a key factor. And people can come to the conclusion or the belief that they are unworthy in a lot of different ways. Mostly it's by mistreatment that they got in their childhood.
Mm.
Because children naturally come to conclusions blaming themselves for whatever happens. And it's, of course, not their fault. It was the parents who weren't there in the right way at the right time. But children are egotistical, and so they say, well, it must be me that's creating the situation. If I'm being beaten, there must be something bad about me. If I'm being abandoned or rejected, I must not be worthy of love. So, yes, it's a key to everything else, because if that's there, it doesn't matter what else you do for them. they can't accept it. They can't even accept a compliment or a recommendation for how to be more loving.
Right. And I think that the limiting belief there, you can correct me or add to this, is something like, I'm a bad person, or
yes,
I don't deserve happiness
forms.
Because I'm
so
a bad person.
For person.
Is that what's at the root of this?
I'm a terrible person. For another person, it might be I'm a sinner. For another person, it might be there's something so wrong and broken about me that it'll never be repaired. So each person has it in their own particular form.
I have a co-producer on one of my podcasts. He is a veteran. He did like 3 tours in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And he struggles with limiting beliefs, Lion. And it's so interesting and sad, but truly fascinating to see him and his beliefs, because he did some bad things when he was overseas, man. I mean, he wasn't back at home base sweeping the floors. He was the Hurt Locker guy. He was clearing the paths between the bases of IEDs. That was his job. I mean, he was in the crap, and he did some horrible stuff, and now he thinks he's a bad person because of it. And it's just so funny, because from my perspective, he's one of the best people I know. You know, Lion, we had a conversation once. We were talking about, he has some crazy stories. He was telling some crazy stories. And I said, man, you're so cool. And like, you're so cool and calm and in emergency situations. Like, you always keep such a level head. Like, I was talking about how he would be the number one person I'd want in an emergency situation. And he turned to me and he said, you know, man, I don't have kids. You got the 2-year-old now. If something goes down, I'm just laying down my life for you. And he was kind of kidding. Like, we had a laugh about it, but he was serious. He was dead serious. And I just thought to myself, what's more good than that? And how can he be walking around thinking I'm a horrible person? And what would you say to him to help him get past? That's the thing. I try to make him feel better. What am I going to do, man? I'm like, I try to tell him, like, man, you're a good person. You've done some bad things. But what would you say to someone like him, Lion? And what do you think of that?
Well, it's important to understand the root of shame. It's been called moral disgust. And disgust is a emotion, a very core emotion that all animals have. Something smells bad, we go, "Ugh," and we walk away from it. And because we're humans, we have a morality, which is this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. And so if we do something wrong or bad, or is considered wrong or bad, we are disgusted with ourselves. And so he has to get over that shame. And it's not an easy thing. It is possible, but it takes some time, because that's a very, very deep, deep issue. It's like PTSD. It's like it comes from multiple traumas that cause you to be afraid of yourself, afraid of the world, unable to put yourself back together. So it does take some time to get through that, but it can be done by clearing out the deep, deep shame and the deep beliefs about yourself and about what you've done.
It's just so wild, because from my perspective, here I am, you know, he's like a war hero who just, you know, honestly said to me, like, I'd die for you if it came down to it, without moment's hesitation. And I'm just thinking, what's more good than that, Lion? Like, there are so many people who would never do anything close to that. And he's thinking, you know, I'm a horrible person. I don't even deserve happiness. Or it's just wild.
Yeah, it's his own moral disgust that about himself that's at issue here. You can tell him all day long he's a wonderful guy and that he didn't do anything wrong, but it's his own internal self-judgment that's causing the breakdown.
That's
and
exactly
a lot of
right.
people a lot of people carry self-judgment because of all of our programming that we got. Often parents will help you with your self-judgment by telling you you're an idiot or you're stupid or you'll never amount to anything. So not only do we have our own beliefs about ourselves, but we also have all of our parents' indoctrination. It's a big pile of beliefs that we need to get through. But
totally.
Once we get through them, then we realize who we really are, which is none of those beliefs.
And that's what you're right. That's what is truly profound. But we have to start from some point of loving yourself. And what I told him is, man, there are so few bad people, so few evil people. What there are is a lot of people who are good people who have done bad things. And you're one of those people, which puts you in the group of everybody, by the way. You know what I mean? Would you agree with that, Lion?
Yes. One of the key mistakes that parents make and children make because their parents make it is not distinguishing between who I am and what I do. So a child will do something bad or wrong, and the parent will say, "You're a terrible person." rather right. than you did something that isn't okay and we need to fix it.
Right.
You, I love you. You're a good person, but the thing you did was wrong or incorrect. And so that distinction has gotten confused in throughout history, and that's what makes us feel bad about ourselves when we make mistakes. Mistakes are how we learn. And then a good set of parents will say, hey, you made another mistake. Congratulations. Now you know something that doesn't work. but instead we say, oh, you made a mistake, bad, wrong, you know, humiliation and all that stuff. So that builds our self-image into seeing ourselves as wrong instead of learning from our mistakes.
Totally. So everybody out there, love yourself before you get started here. Give yourself a nice big hug and realize that just by virtue of the fact that we are here existing at the same time, that does make you special and that makes our bond special. So thank you all for listening, and thank you, Lion, for putting together this piece that we're about to hear.
Thanks, Jordan. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, everybody. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Emotional Month Clearing. I'm happy you're here. Happiness. That's an emotion, right? Well, what exactly is an emotion? We should agree on a definition first. So, what's the difference between a feeling and an emotion? Now, we're using words to describe something completely internal. It's not something you can put under the microscope or measure scientifically. Now, it's possible that my anger is completely different than your anger, but we call it the same word. How can we talk about it in a way that makes sense and communicate to each other what we're talking about? How many emotions are there, and why are there so many words for them? One way we can communicate what we're feeling to one another is to focus on specific body sensations that we're feeling. That's a language that describes in very specific terms what you're actually experiencing. An experience happens before we have word labels for it. As I pointed out in Intellectual Month, our language is convenient as a way of communicating and teaching each other, but it separates us from the direct experience, nowhere more so than emotions. You have a feeling, and then you label it. I'm anxious, I'm jealous, I'm angry. And suddenly you're in your head, not your body, and you've lost the thread of the actual feeling. There's a way to describe a feeling that communicates your experience much better than word labels, and that's by describing in detail the sensations you're having in your body. Sensations can be felt and described very specifically, and you are the only one who can describe it. When you do, the other person can duplicate those sensations in their own body and get a sense of what you're actually feeling. Here's an example. If I say, I'm angry with you, you have no idea what I'm experiencing. And most of us are afraid of anger because anger is usually scary and dangerous and harmful. So we avoid feeling anger, or if we're the target, we freak out when the other person is expressing it. And for good reason. It looks dangerous. So your limbic response, your emotional brain, and your threat detector sends you into the fight or flight zone. You run the other way, or you fight back, or you freeze, or you fold, or collapse. Now, because of this, we tend to hold in our own anger, or we try to ignore it, or we suppress it, because we don't want to be dangerous to others. Now, the problem with that is that you don't get to experience it fully, so it gets stuck in you. And the other person doesn't get to understand what you're feeling so that they can't be compassionate because they're afraid. I'm going to show you some neat tricks that solve both of these problems. The first one is a technique I like to call micro-attention. That means that you put all of your attention on your body sensations and you describe them as accurately as you can out loud. Now, most of us have never seen a healthy and responsible expression of anger. This technique is safe and responsible, and it preserves and deepens your relationship because you're being vulnerable about what you're feeling while you're feeling it. I'm going to demonstrate this form of healthy, responsible anger. And as I do, notice how you feel as I express my anger with this technique called microattention. Imagine that I'm angry at you, and that I'm expressing my anger right in front of you. So keep one eye on your response as you listen to how I do this. Here we go. Ready? When you did that, it made me feel really angry. I can feel it in my chest. There's a really fast, kind of hard vibration there, like a scared animal trying to jump out of my chest. And I can feel my jaw really tight, like I'm trying to hold something back. Oh yeah, I'm holding back tears. I can feel the sadness underneath the anger. You reminded me of my critical mother when you said that, and that always pissed me off because she was saying that there was something wrong with me, and I didn't feel lovable when she said that. And now I notice my legs are shaking like I'm going to run away. I'm not going to because I really value our relationship. I don't want to abandon you, so I'm going to stand here and keep feeling it. My hands are in fists. I want to punch something, but I'm not going to because I care about you and I don't want you to feel unsafe. My hands want to do something. They're pushing. Oh, yeah. Like I'm pushing you away because you hurt my feelings. Okay, the energy's slowing down. It's about half of what it was before. My breathing is slowing a bit, and that vibration in my chest has quieted down, and my leg vibrations are gone, almost gone. No, they're still there a little bit. Yeah, okay, they're kind of fading away. And I can feel my feet on the ground as I stand here. I can feel my forehead and the back of my head relaxing a little bit. And I realize that my heart is hurting from feeling criticized. I know you were just trying to help me. It was my filter, how I heard it, that made it sound like criticism. I'm so sensitive to that tone of voice you used because it sounds like my mom. Wow, I just want to collapse and sob. I'm feeling all those times mom said those things to me. So the anger feelings are completely draining out of me now that I'm feeling what's underneath it. Oh, whew, it's kind of dissipating. So I can breathe normally again, and I'm going to stand up straight. And I'm going to open my eyes now. I'm not angry anymore. So it's good to see you. Thank you for hearing me and standing with me through this. So how are you feeling right now? Are you okay? Okay, so take a breath and feel what you're feeling after that little episode of someone expressing their anger to you in a healthy and clean and responsible way. So how did you feel? Did you feel safe or did you feel like you were in danger? Were you scared or angry or sad? Did you want to move away from me or move closer to me? And did you feel some compassion? Now, if you had an angry or destructive person in your family, imagine what your life would have been like if that person had been able to do this. You can practice this technique in your own life. You know, what we call negative emotions are just emotions, which means energy in motion. Anger is actually a very useful energy. If you're in danger, anger is the fight response. You get energy from adrenaline flowing through your body so you can defend yourself or run. If we don't own that energy, if we think it's bad or dangerous, we miss out on a whole range of feelings. And all feelings just want to be felt, just like all experiences want to be experienced. That energy that comes from anger enables you to move and change the world. So if you're angry at something that's happening, do something to change it. Become an activist. Defend those who are vulnerable or being victimized. Use it to change the world. Anger is a natural human emotion, and we need to feel it fully in a healthy, responsible way. And also allow our children to feel angry when they're angry. Now, when I expressed anger to my mom, I got smacked across the face. So I believed at that moment, that's not an acceptable thing to feel, so I won't feel it ever again. And it took me some time to learn how to open up that suppressed energy in my body and my feelings. As soon as we can't feel something or we're not allowed to express our feelings, we begin to create a false self, a persona. The word persona is the root of personality, and it comes from the Greek theater where actors wore masks. These were called personas. They're the masks that we wear. And we put on these masks, this false front, as a strategy for survival. For example, here's a belief. If I'm quiet and still, Dad won't get angry with me. Here's another one. If I don't say how I feel, Mom won't be mad and abandon me. And another one. If I'm nice and help them, they'll approve of me. Now, these are beliefs, they're also strategies for survival, and our personality gets shaped around them. they become a false self or adaptive self that we show to the world. It's not who we really are. Over my many decades of exploration and experience, I've developed a philosophy of life. One conclusion that I came to is that in order to be fully alive, fully authentic, and fully here, we need to feel everything fully and express it as fully as we can. And of course, how we express it matters. You have to learn how to express yourself in non-harmful ways. If you have a big feeling and you don't have the verbal skills yet, do something else to express yourself. Go outside and chop wood to express your anger. Go crazy dancing to some loud music to get your frustration out, or if you're feeling stuck. Paint a canvas with your passion or your sadness. Hit a pillow or the bed to express your hate and desire to destroy the thing that's hurting you. By the way, be very careful expressing big feelings in front of young children. Now, most of them can't handle the big energies that come from adult feelings. They have a hard enough time managing their own feelings. What you can do is show them in a gentle way that it's okay to express our feelings with words and that they can do some of those safe actions to express things physically and safely. Hitting pillows is very helpful for them to get out their anger. Now, as you learn to speak your truth in kind and responsible ways, they will also learn how to do that from you. And this micro-attention technique is a great place to start. Emotions are a form of energy. Emotion could stand for energy in motion. And all energies have a life cycle. Like an ocean wave, they arise and they peak, and then they descend and they disappear or they change. And as I said, experiences want to be experienced. Humans tend to resist half of all of their experiences, the unpleasant ones, the painful half. And here's a powerful key insight I want you to remember, because it's crucial for understanding, for living life, and for healing. When you experience an experience fully, it will disappear or change, usually fairly quickly. Most emotions only last 30 to 90 seconds when they're felt and experienced fully. And any experience that is not experienced fully, that's resisted in some way, persists. You've heard that before. Resistance causes persistence. It sticks around in some way or in some form. Now, resistance can be defined as anything you do other than experiencing your experience fully. When you resist a feeling, it keeps it stuck in the body. It gets bigger, it increases in volume because it's trying to get your attention. It wants to be felt. Now, there's dozens of ways to not feel a feeling. You can distract yourself from it. You could put your attention elsewhere. You can do something about it, get into action, react to it, get angry, or get busy. You can think about it, contemplate it, figure it out. Use any mental process to get out of your feelings. You can judge it. You can compare it to other experiences and find it better or worse or more or less. You can discuss it with friends endlessly, get support or analysis from your therapist. You can ignore it. You can suppress it. You can push it down or push it away. You can pretend it's not happening. You can deny it. That's a very popular way of not feeling your feelings. Now, since the emotion wants to be experienced, when you resist it, your mind will create an opportunity to experience it in some other way, at some other time. For example, you might have an unpleasant experience that happens over and over again, such as being victimized or betrayed or abandoned. You might hear an internal voice that says some phrase over and over again, such as, "You're doing it all wrong," or "You're a terrible person." You might have persistent pains or body sensations, cluster headaches or unexplained rashes or nausea or joint problems. And you may have an experience that gets much more intense over time instead of being released. That happens in PTSD or deep grief. So here's an uncomfortable truth. Painful experiences can be experienced either very intensely for a short period of time or very subtly for a long period of time. If you resist a painful experience, you're likely to experience that pain at a low level, kind of like an annoying itch in the background, until you experience it fully which then allows it to complete itself and disappear. The way out of these resistant cycles is to become willing to experience the feeling without resistance. Now, this is painful for a short period of time, but it saves you a lot of time and trouble over the long haul. Here's a way to experience this directly. It's an experiment you can do the next time this happens. Imagine banging your shin on a table as you're walking through the house at night. Now, if you're like me, you'll hop around holding your shin, yelling, "Who put that there? Boy, am I stupid? Why didn't you leave the light on?" Now, these are all ways of resisting or not feeling the pain. So the next time this happens, try something different. Take your banged shin or whatever part of your body you hurt and put it back where you banged it and push it against that place and feel the pain fully and see how long the pain lasts. Probably it'll last 30 to 90 seconds at the most. And if you become willing to feel it fully, stuff won't get stuck in you. And by the way, this is kind of miraculous. You won't bruise or bruise as badly if you do this. Let's take the next step in learning to feel more. We're going to focus again on body sensations rather than emotion words, because body sensations are very personal, and only you can describe them. Every sensation has boundaries in some dimension. When you put your attention on it, you can detect its shape and its size and other physical aspects, such as color, temperature, or materiality. Now, this practice, which I call body wisdom, is a way of feeling something fully. It guides your attention back to the sensation over and over again in order to really feel what it feels like and measure it and communicate it. The measurements do not have to make sense in the physical world because it's not physical, it's experiential. Your description will be accurate because it's your description. And if the exercise goes well and you really experience it fully, it will change or disappear. And if it doesn't change or disappear, that means you haven't experienced it fully yet. So just keep investigating it with curious attention until it does change or disappear. And we'll begin now and you'll see how it works. I'll be asking you to describe aspects of your sensation, and I'd like you to do it verbally, either by speaking it out loud, if you're in a place where you can do that, or writing it down. Now, I'd like you to remember an uncomfortable or upsetting experience or feeling you've had in the last day or two. Maybe you got angry at someone, or maybe you felt sad about something. Maybe you got pissed off and driving in traffic. Something where you had a strong emotional reaction. So go ahead and remember a particular incident where this happened, where you got upset recently. I'd like you now to recall the experience and the feeling that came up as soon as you got upset. Feel that feeling in your body. Duplicate it so you can put yourself right in that experience. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. And by the way, if you're driving or in a space that's uncomfortable, don't do this exercise now. Stop the recording and do it later when you are in a safe place and you won't be disturbed. Place your attention on the sensation in your body as you recall the upsetting incident. And now look inside your body. It helps to close your eyes. You don't have to, but it does help. And you're going to be observing yourself and this particular sensation using your attention, like a flashlight. As you're feeling this sensation on a scale of 0 to 10, where 0 is I don't feel anything at all, to 10, which is excruciatingly painful, where are you on the scale? Where is this sensation on the scale? Give it a number anywhere between 0 and 10 and write it down or remember it. Every sensation has outermost limits, a place where it stops being there. Now, sometimes those edges are very clear and distinct. It just stops. And sometimes they kind of gray out until they're not there. And then that is the outermost limit. Now, one way to feel the outermost limits of the sensation is to feel the center of the sensation, where it's the hottest or most energetic. And then expand your attention outwards in all directions to find out where it ends. And by the way, some sensations extend outside the body, which is fine. Sensations don't have to follow the laws of physics. For example, your sensation might be 5 feet wide, or it weighs 7 tons, or it's made of chrome. Whatever's true for you, whatever it feels like to you, is the answer we're looking for. It doesn't have to make sense to anyone else. Now begin to notice that this sensation in your body has a particular size and shape. Is it a regular shape, like a sphere or a football or a diamond or a donut? Or is it more amorphous, like an amoeba? For each question that I ask you, either say it out loud verbally or write it down. Now notice the physical dimensions of its size. If you held a ruler or a measuring tape up to it, how tall is it? How wide is it? How deep? Describe it as accurately as you can in inches or centimeters or feet or yards or kilometers. Use whatever measurement seems appropriate. Now check to see whether it has a hot spot or an energetic center or a source where it seems to be emanating from. Your sensation may not have one. If it does, where is that located and what shape is it? If the sensation's outermost edges are inside your skin, how far in is it? And if it extends beyond your skin, how far out beyond your skin is it? If you put this sensation on a weight scale, how much would it weigh? Is it very heavy and dense, or is it light and airy? So weigh it with any kind of scale that works for you, grams or ounces or pounds or kilograms or tons. As you put your attention on your sensation, notice its color. If it's a primary color like red, what color red is it? Get creative with your description. Is it brick red or cherry red or fire engine red or orange yellowy red? Whatever you perceive is what it is. And is it the same color all around, or does it change in some way? Some sensations keep changing color. Whatever is true for you is fine. Good. Now just allow this sensation to be there. Give it room to exist, and make sure you're breathing. Now notice the material the sensation appears to be made of. If you felt it with your fingers, would it be cold and hard like metal, or soft and gushy like a teddy bear, or sharp and spiky like a porcupine, or fluffy like a cloud? Notice the quality of the material that the sensation feels like, and name the material. Whatever it appears to be is fine. Now notice the temperature of the sensation. Is it warmer than surrounding body tissue, or cooler, or is it the same? And now check to see whether the sensation is moving in some way. Is it vibrating or pulsing, or is it still and motionless? Okay, good. Okay, just allow that sensation to be there. If you can, welcome it, as you would an old friend who just showed up at your house. Invite it in for a cup of tea. Make it feel welcome. You may notice that the sensation is changing as you put your attention on it. And if you do, describe how it is now in this moment. It's quite normal for sensations to change as you place your attention on them. So look to see whether it's changed since we began, and if so, describe the changes to yourself. Sensations are like messengers knocking at your door. Now, if you ignore the messenger, he has to knock louder and louder. And then he starts ringing your doorbell over and over to get your attention. And if you continue to ignore him, he gets out a sledgehammer and starts breaking down your door. However, if you answer the door and say, "What?" he says, "I have a message for you. Sign here." And you sign, and then he gives you the message, and he goes away happy. He's done his job. Sensations are aspects of yourself. And if you speak to them, they'll usually speak back. So now focus your attention on this sensation that you've been feeling and recognize it as a messenger and ask it this question: what message do you have for me? and listen to what it says. It might do it in words or images or memories or feelings. Take whatever you get and speak it aloud or write it down. This is a time to pay really close attention. And if you get nothing, that's fine too. Just continue to feel the sensation. And when you do get information from the sensation, be courteous and say thank you. What other information do you have for me? And you may get more. Okay, when you're done receiving the information, check to see whether the sensation is still there, or is it gone, or has it changed in some way. Remember the scale I gave you of 0 to 10, where 0 is I don't feel anything at all, and 10 is excruciatingly painful. Where is this sensation now on the scale? Did the sensation change in intensity, or did it disappear completely? Did it become more intense? Or is it the same as before? Okay, great. Just relax and let go of it, and return your attention to your whole self and your surroundings. How are you feeling? Did you experience some relief? The body wisdom process is also called embodied mindfulness. It has many names, and you can use it any time. And you can also help other people who are in a big upset or a breakdown. Just ask them that series of questions, and they'll get through it more quickly. Again, the reason this happens is that same rule of the mind. When you experience your experience, it will change or disappear. And when you resist it or ignore it, it will persist and it'll come out somewhere else later. I want to bring up one more important point, the connection between your emotions and your beliefs. I've talked about beliefs as lenses that we look through and that we experience through. They're lenses of interpretation and meaning. We don't see the world clearly. We don't see other people clearly, or even ourselves clearly. We see a colored, distorted, shaped version of reality, depending on the lens we're looking through. So when something happens, there's what happened, and there's your interpretation of what happened. What happened can be described objectively in physical terms. For example, what she actually said, her exact words, the qualities of her voice, and how her body moved when she said it. For example, she said the words, "You're an idiot," and when she did, she stood up, pointed at me with her forefinger, and her voice was tense and strong, and then she walked out of the room. Those are the facts. That's what actually happened. Then there's your interpretation of what happened, including what you felt when it happened and what it meant to you. This is what happens when reality comes through your belief filter. Now, if this happened to me, I might describe it this way. She got really mad at me for no reason, and then she stood up and she threatened me, and she called me an idiot like she's some judge of my intelligence, which is a laugh. And then she walked out and abandoned me as some kind of punishment because I expressed my opinion. I was so angry at her, I yelled at her, "You're the idiot," and I felt much better. Now, of course, that's all interpretation and explanation of what happened from my point of view. And her explanation and interpretation would be completely different. She's over there having her experience inside her head, and she's experiencing her version of what happened through her belief and interpretation filter. Now, couples get into this kind of argument all the time. Who said what, and who did what to whom, and who started it, and what it meant, and how wrong the other person is in their description of it. It's the old he said, she said that psychologists refer to. There's no right or wrong here. Two people interacted, and they had two completely different experiences inside themselves, and they explained what happened in completely different ways. Now, of course, your interpretations depend on what you believe about yourself and what you believe about the other person and what you believe about what's happening. You think you're experiencing what actually happened, but you can only experience what happened inside of your head as seen through your beliefs. Okay, my point here is that beliefs create our emotions by filtering everything we see and experience. I'm going to give you a very direct example. Imagine you're about to go on a roller coaster at a theme park. You've been standing in line, and as you get closer, you can see people getting strapped in, and then shot like a cannon up a steep climb, then swirled around like a top, upside down and inside out and around curves, and you can hear them screaming. How do you feel right now? describe those sensations to yourself. Most people have feelings that fall into one of two categories when I ask this question. One is anxiety, fear, terror, and panic. That's if they don't like roller coasters. And if they do like roller coasters, they feel anticipation and excitement and titillation. What's the difference? It's just a single belief. Now try these beliefs on and you'll see what happens. Imagine again that you're about to get on the roller coaster and feel what it feels like to believe, I can't handle this. And notice how it feels in your body when you say, I can't handle this, and you're about to get on the roller coaster. Okay, good. Feels awful, doesn't it? Okay, now take that belief off. Just throw it away. And now feel what it feels like to believe, I can handle this. Great. Same experience, two different beliefs, two different feelings. Did you notice the shift? Here are some more beliefs you can try on and feel the emotion that comes from having each of these beliefs. Try each one on as if you're trying on clothes at a department store. You put on an outfit, look in the mirror, and feel what you feel like when you're wearing it. Does it make you look good and feel good or not? If not, you take it off and put it back on the rack or you throw it on the floor. That's what you'll be doing with these beliefs. Now, you don't have to buy anything. You're just trying them on to see how they feel. So we'll start with my favorite belief to use as an example. Feel what it feels like to hold the belief, there's something wrong with me. Say it to yourself and see what it feels like to believe it 100%. There's something wrong with me. And note how your body feels, what it wants to do. After noting the sensations, take that belief off, throw it to the ground, or put it in the trash can. And now try on a different belief. Feel what it feels like to hold the belief, I am a sacred and worthy being. Notice how your body feels now and what it wants to do, and notice your posture. Good. Now take that one off. You can always try it on again later. And feel what it feels like to hold each of these beliefs. I'll say them, and then you say it to yourself as if it's 100% true, just to try it on, and feel what it feels like to hold this belief. I'm not safe. Say it to yourself, believe it, and feel what it feels like. This is the core of fear and anxiety. Okay, take that one off and throw it away. Feel what it feels like to hold the belief, I am powerless. There are two different emotions that can come from this belief. One is anger, and the other is collapse or folding. When you feel anger, you're trying to gain your power back. And when you're folding, you're giving up on the possibility that you're going to be able to get your power back. Okay, take that off and let it go. Feel what it feels like to hold the belief, this is much too painful and I can't handle this feeling. Now, this is a pretty bad one. It might feel like terror or confusion. And many people go into numbing out or detaching or dissociating in order to deal with this particular feeling. So go ahead and take that one off and let it go. Feel what it feels like to hold the belief, I can't get my needs met. The feeling that comes from this belief could be sadness, could be a collapse or a turning inwards or withdrawing. So take that one off and take all the remnants of these beliefs off. Let them fall to the floor, put them in a trash can, throw them outdoors. Okay, so that was probably very uncomfortable and I apologize for that. But to make you feel better, let's try on some positive beliefs. And if you like them, feel free to keep them. You don't even have to pay for them. So feel what it feels like to hold the belief, I am a whole and beautiful human being, including all of my flaws. Good. Take that off and set it aside. Feel this belief. I am safe. My body just relaxes when I feel that, when I believe that. Take that one off and set it aside. This is a very empowering belief. I decide. When you have the power to decide, you have the power to control your life. Set that one aside. Feel what it feels like to hold this belief. I express my power in healthy and positive ways. Feels powerful, doesn't it? That's a good one. Okay, set that one aside. I feel all of my feelings fully, and I can handle any feeling that arises. That's another empowering one. Take that one off and set it to the side. And try this one on. I always get my needs met one way or the other, unless I don't, which is okay too. That one kind of handles all that neediness, doesn't it? All right, and we'll finish with my favorite one. I am a sacred and worthy being. Wonderful. Now you can try on any belief and feel it. Feel what it feels like to hold that belief. It's a great practice. You can even try on other people's beliefs, beliefs that you don't believe yourself. And when you do, you're actually feeling what they feel. And this is a way of gaining compassion for others. I hope this investigation into emotions has been enlightening for you. And I'll leave you with this. Remember, you have emotions, and you are not your emotions. You have beliefs, and you are not your beliefs. You have a mind, and you are not your mind. So the question is, who are you? Enjoy your exploration, and please comment below. See you next month.